Good evening. Welcome to the Salaria Report. Today is January 19th. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and we're discussing the annual wrap-up equity overview with Rambus's blockbuster Chartology. I want you to make sure you have your web presentation up. You can link to it through the subscriber links on your Salaria Report commentary. Any of the commentaries for the annual wrap-up will take you to the web presentation. You're going to want to access and use this information. First of all, when we talk about it, it's much easier if you're looking at the charts, but then you're going to want to use this information to help you prepare your 2017 strategies, both for investment of your time, your money, whether it's personal, business. I love doing scenario planning, and I've used it for planning for many, many years. There are three sections. First, we're going to go through the web presentation charts and review 2016, talk a little bit about what happened. Then we're going to turn to Rambus's charts and talk about what he says now in January 2017, what the markets look like. And then we're going to go through the future scenarios. And this year, my future scenarios are very different than they have been in the past. So we're talking about a big change, a big turn. It's very, very different than the last annual wrap-ups, all of the annual wrap-ups since I started the Salaria Report. Okay, so let's turn to 2016 review of web presentation charts. If you click right on the markets, you'll pull up the overview page, and there's a quick overview of all the markets and then a chart of the U.S. dollar. And as you can see, the U.S. dollar had an interesting year. It fell, was down in the summer, and then continued to climb back up and ended the year up a little bit more than 3.5%. And that means the bull trend in the market continues, and the dollar continues to be the strong go-to currency despite all the concerns about the long term. So bottom line, bull trend in market in the dollar continued, particularly after the election. So summer months were rough, but after the election, it really pulled up. Fixed income, if you go down under markets and click on fixed income, you'll look at the fixed income charts. Let me just get there. And it was quite an interesting year. We started the year thinking, okay, the end of the long-term bull market is upon us, and certainly expected that. The opposite happened. Interest rates went deeply into the negative market. We had quite a lot of sovereign bonds in the negative market, and the long treasury just flew. As you can see, we're up over 20% by in July, which was incredible. If you were expecting rising interest rates, the Fed had risen interest rates. They'd bumped them in December 2015 and then said they were going to do it quarterly throughout the year. And of course, chickened out until December 2016. And so between the negative interest rates globally and the money looking for any kind of yield in that market and the Fed backing off, treasuries just flew. And so the long treasury ETF up over 20%, the intermediate nowhere near as glorious, but it went up over 8%, which was quite astonishing because when that was happening, the S&P was still not doing anywhere near as well as it closed at the end of the year. Corporate bonds outperformed other bonds. The Treasury spiked beyond, but corporate bonds ended up doing reasonably well for the year, up 2.42%. The star was junk, up 14.43%, even outperforming S&P, and you know, I keep saying to you, I'm sure you're bored hearing it every money in markets, you know, how in the world? The problem with junk is the minute the market tanks, you're going to see, you know, you could see down 50%. So I don't have the courage to do junk. I know too much about the credit ratings. Okay, so fixed income, though, we come to the end of the year, and yes, the Fed bumps rates, but the market bumped rates a lot more before the Fed did. And what we saw was all the glorious gains that we'd gotten were given up. So TLT, the long treasury ETF, which had been over 20%, gives everything back and closes the year at 1%. The intermediate's doing a tad better, but essentially in the same place. So all the gains given up by the end of the year. And junk did not give up its gains. That's what was so remarkable. Corporate bonds gave up some of theirs, but held up better. And so clearly, it's interesting, in the middle of the summer, Jeff Gundlach, the bond king, declared the end of the long-term bull market. And I think he called it right. I think, you know, maybe it was a month or two early, but he definitely called it right. And I do think we've seen the end of the long-term bull market in bonds. And it's having a dramatic impact on politics. I think a lot of what we're watching in terms of the campaign reflects that, and the fact that money is about to get much more dear. I just noticed a headline today that the Obama leaves office with $75,000 per person more debt for everybody who had a full-time job as of December 2016. So that's a very tough financial situation. And I what we're watching in Washington is a whole group of people who've had fun in the bubble, not wanting to give the bubble up and not realizing there is no choice. It's pure mathematics. Okay, if you turn to equities, just drop down on the drop down menu, you can pull it up. The S&P, you can see, was really like a little turtle that sort of won the performance of the year, although it was outperformed by junk. It just kind of turtled along throughout the year, and so many other things soared, like the long treasuries, and they did a roller coaster up and then come down, and the turtle just kept going up. And then, of course, we had, after the election, we had what's called the Trump surge, whereas bonds had the Trump thwack, is what they call it. And so, you know, U.S. equities, at the beginning of the year, we're all concerned that they were as high as they could go, but they turtled along and did quite well. Some of the star performers were U.S. defense stocks. Trump is saying he's going to rebuild the army and the military, but I think the performance all year long says the fact that both candidates were fairly pro-defense. And with the troubled world, I think defense is perceived to be a safe place to grow. Industrials did remarkably well in financials, particularly the regional banks just skyrocketed. They were up 35% for the year, most of that coming after the Trump election. And healthcare had a rocky time given what's been going on with the debate over Obamacare. Healthcare stocks rose a lot on Obamacare, as we've discussed many times, and now they're giving some of that back. Interestingly enough, home construction and home building, which was supposed to do so gloriously, I kept pointing out Clinton's first ad looked like a Fannie Mae commercial. That story, the storyline didn't work out, one, because the economy didn't begin to match the glory of what the Fed was expecting or the Democrats were expecting, and so home building just didn't perform. Europe did nowhere near as well as the U.S. markets, but because Germany pulled out with the Trump surge, Europe got the benefit. And there's no doubt the European stocks look infinitely more attractive right now than the U.S. stocks, just because the U.S. has traded so high. As you can see, Asia did not. One of the roller coasters was the emerging markets. So the emerging markets went up to almost 20%, peaked, and then came back down. So not much stronger than I expected for the year, but choppy. And then China really was almost flat. The small caps underperformed the large caps. The large caps ended the year up a point, and small caps down 4%. I expected India to have a very good year, and sure enough, it was almost up at 10% coming into October. And then we saw Modi basically destroy the economy, trying to please the guys from Davos in the U.S. to get everybody onto strict cash payments. It's a very ugly example, one of the ugliest I've seen, of central controls being forced onto an economy. The excuse was it was going to take away corruption. No, the whole goal was to make sure that centralized corruption could reign supreme. It's a very ugly picture, and the harm done to both the economy and the people is is pretty sad to see. Now, if you look at how strong I think the growth over the next 10 years in the Indian economy is going to be, I don't think it's going to kill things, but it just shows you an example of how much destruction centralization can do. And then finally, the frontier markets that have been really down and out this year, they were down almost 13%, have started to come back after the election. So maybe we see a little bump in the frontier markets this year. But essentially, the strong part in the equity markets was the U.S. market, and it continues to be somewhat of a safe haven. So, but the clear message from 2016 across the board was that the bull market in equities continues. And that was given for U.S. companies. That was against some pretty strong headwinds, both on the earnings side and the potential for rising interest rates. Let me see if there's any. So if you that just click down in your menu bar to commodities, we'll take a look at precious metals. We really thought by the summer that the long-term trend up in gold and silver had reasserted itself, and you had certainly a very strong performance. Silver up almost 50% as of the beginning of August, and the miners were glorious, almost touching. They were above 160%, the junior miners, and the mining stock ETF above 120, almost 130 at the peak. And then the roller coaster came way down with bullion closing below the equity market, silver a little bit above at 14%, same as junk. But it was I think the you know our hope was that the bullion, the gold and silver long-term bull were going to reassert, and I would say after watching what happened in the second half of the year that we're still in the consolidation, and the bull has yet to prove itself. Now, that could happen this year, and I certainly think the chances are good that will happen. And then oil had a wild ride and ended up basically flat. So, but despite that, Russia had an awfully good year, especially after Trump won. So, it was interesting to watch the oil market. There are deep questions about what the future of energy is, and there's no doubt that it is imperative to the global economy that we figure out how to keep energy prices as low as possible. I also put up charts for the commodities index so you can see a breakdown of the different kinds of commodities. It was looking much better than last year, certainly if you live across from the Hickory Valley cotton gin, as I do. It's much nicer to see cotton up 9.71% than to see it down 37% last year was tough for the cotton farmers. And finally, the Baltic Dry Index, which seems to be moving up steadily. So despite all the talk about no globalization, trade seems to be happening. Okay, so that's a quick review of the charts, and I would encourage you to just go through those charts. Particularly, I like to look at them next to news, trends, and stories, because price matters and price tells a story. It's a very important story. One of the great stories of this year in the equity markets is when the equity markets started to trade the Trump victory the day after NYPD and FBI got clearance to access, or they got the Anthony Weiner laptop and then got permission to access it. It was very kind of funny to watch. So price matters and price will tell you a lot. So if you click again on markets and drop down, the first drop down is the Rambus 2000, January 19, 2017 dated Blockbuster Chartology. It's really, Rambus is really a very remarkable technical analyst. And I don't have a lot of patience for doing technical analysis, and he can sit for hours and just do it. He's really remarkable. Anyway, so this is a picture of where we've been, but really tells you where the markets are in January. So let's just go through and take a look at currencies. One of the things he shows you is how strong the dollar looks. And one of my chief concerns, it was a concern last year, and you're going to hear it from me again this year, is we could see the dollar, which is broken through the $100 line, which is a very important technical line. It's, you know, it certainly looks like a breakout, and it's holding its own. We could see the dollar move up to 106, 110, very, very strong performance. Now, the companies that export certainly don't like that, because it means they are fighting a huge headwind, or the ones who have to import foreign goods who have to consolidate earnings back can run into trouble. So there are a lot of reasons to want to keep the trading range more stable, and that could help get that to happen. I think it has happened over the last 2 years. There's been tremendous pressure from the corporations to not let the dollar get too high. However, if the Fed continues to bump interest rates during this year, if we get one or two bumps, or the market bumps interest rates, I think you're going to see plenty of money coming into the dollar. The only other problem, and he looks at the charts for the euros, is we have series of major elections in Europe coming up this year. France, Netherlands, Germany, and the German vice chancellor now admitting that it's not unthinkable that the EU could come apart. And the question, of course, is if that happens, what does it mean for the euro? And what that means is money is not going into the euro, it's coming out of the euro, and other than central bank money, and it's going to be good news for the dollar. There's really, I keep encouraging those who ask me the question to go back and look at the Economist piece, Dollar Dangerous and Dominant. But right now, there's absolutely no currency on the planet that can offer the size and liquidity that numerous people in the currency and fixed income market need. So I think the dollar is going to be dominant. And my big concern is if we get a big run-up in the dollar, if you look at the charts that Rambus has done in the precious metal section, that could be very tough on the price of gold if it happens. And of course, my big concern is we get a bear trap, a dollar bear trap in the emerging markets, and they have borrowed a lot of dollars, and dollars will suddenly become very cheap. They can't print them, we can. And you could really see the emerging markets get thrown for a loop, and that could cause all sorts of problems. So, and it wouldn't surprise me at the beginning of the year, the reason the Fed backed off from raising interest rates had nothing to do with the United States. It had to do with concern for China and what that might do. So I think the Fed is operating as a global central bank, and as a practical matter, at this point, they have to. Okay, so dollar, again, charts show the strong bull trend for the dollar and the euro being very choppy. Okay, so let's look at the equity section. We have several pieces that Rambus sent us. One is the sort of on the world equity markets, and there's some very good notes in here from Rambus. So I would encourage you to read it. He also does a good job of showing the breakout in the industrials, particularly after the election, and it's clear that the U.S. market continues in a strong bull trend, and industrials certainly were a part of that in 2016. We keep wondering how we keep being reticent. Financial professionals at this point are really reticent to buy the U.S. market because it's so high, and the earnings increases just don't support continued move up in the market, and yet here it is. And one of the things Rambus points out is, that bull markets fight a wall of worry. And he talks about this as the most hated bull market in the history of the markets, because no one can believe it keeps going up. But it's very, very clear that we are in a bull market in equities, and you can really see it. He goes through some of the international and the frontier markets as well. So it's a very good combination, many, many charts. And then he turns to precious metals. And precious metals is a sort of a love of his. He's traded it for many, many years, and was hopeful that we had gotten a breakout to a bull market last year, and then has watched this consolidation. And the question is, will it hold the 1100 line it has, and now it's just peaked over the 1200 line. And so we're clearly still in the consolidation. The question is the bull going to reassert, or is it going to turn bear? I continue to think the chances are very good that the bull is going to reassert, and I think from reading in between the lines of what Rambis has to say, he feels the same way. The one thing, I've talked with several subscribers who read Rambis's supports, and one of the things they say to me is that they feel that they don't understand all of the technical detail. I will tell you, one of the reasons I use Rambis is I think he's remarkable at continually refocusing his readers on the long-term trend. And that's what he's watching. He's watching the long-term trends and really encourage you to stick with the long-term trends. And his genius has been his ability to call a switch. So when the consolidation started in precious metals, he called it, and of course the gold bugs threw a hissy fit. But he's very good at catching those turns, and of course that's what we want to do. So if you just run through his piece, you see these basically the affirmation of bull in the dollar, bull in equities, and the question, are we still in a consolidation? We're clearly still in a consolidation for precious metals, but will the bull reassert or not? One of the things he does is he makes a chart of the gold versus the U.S. dollar. So it's a chart with a green line as the U.S. dollar. He does the dollar as a green line. It says gold continuous contract, EOD, CME. It's further down in the presentation. And you can, the dollar's green line, and then the gold is the dark yellow line. And what you can see is the how they tend to trade inversely against each other. And my big concern is that if we get a very strong dollar, which we could, given a lot of the politics, the proposals to drop the tax rates or to reshore a lot of activity and a lot of cash held by the corporations abroad, not to mention what they could bring back from the, you know, that was shifted during the financial coup. That could be, you're talking about multiple factors that could be extremely bullish for the dollar, particularly if we start to see unraveling around the world. So the one thing I caution everyone on precious metals is if you're going to hold a position in precious metals, you want to be able to hold that which you can hold in extreme volatility, because if we should break the 1100 line, in theory we could go down all the way to 700 and still be in the bull market. So a consolidation could go that low. Anyway, so there's Rambis. Let's turn to scenario. If you click on the section in the navigation bar that says 2017, get ready, what you'll find is a graph that shows our four scenarios for the year. When you do scenario design, you pick out key variables. And then you have a range of those variables. One, it's always done in quadrants. So you have two axes. One is vertical, one is horizontal. And the crossing of those two creates four quadrants. And so the idea is to identify the key variables that will sort of drive things one way or another. And the two key variables are two that we've talked about a lot over the last year. One is multipolar versus unipolar. Are we going to live in a unipolar world? Are we going to live in a multipolar world? Now, you would think, given what we've seen over the last year and in the election, well, certainly, Catherine, we're going to go to a multipolar world. And it certainly looks like that. My only concern is a unipolar world could still reassert itself by global investors working through multiple countries, getting tight control of the digital systems and space weaponry. We still don't know who Mr. Global is and what Mr. Global's resources are. So I still don't, I think the chances of a unipolar U.S. world, U.S.-dominated world, are certainly not what they were 5 years ago, but I don't underestimate Mr. Global's ability to centralize and create a command and control system, and that's what I'm more worried about. So the vertical axis is political and economic alignment, and it can be multipolar or unipolar. And then the horizontal axis is the other key variable, which is positive or negative return on investment to taxpayers. So is government money spent in a productive way with integrity and competence, or is it spent in a corrupt or incompetent way? And particularly because the U.S. Budget has such a dramatic impact on all the financial markets globally and a lot of the cash flows. It's the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and it needs to be significantly re-engineered. And that was part of why the debate in this campaign, to my surprise, got very real, because the debt growth model is over, the money's over, and so now you're going to have to get down and start really performing. So we have multipolar versus unipolar. We talked a lot about these issues with Saker, and Saker's going to be back in 2 weeks to pick up on that conversation. So I know you've heard a lot about it in all the Saker discussions over the last, I think we've done six at this point, and there's another chance if you have questions or want to try and understand that world. Saker has a great book, and it's one of the books listed for best books in 2017, which is under the winners section. And then we talked about the negative return on investment to taxpayers versus positive in the series we've been doing on the transition to the new administration. So we did Trump transition with Dr. Farrell. We did Goldman Sachs, CIA, Russia, and the conversion of, or the privatization of, the covert finance, and just published that this week. And then we did Make America, Can America Be Great Again with John Rappaport. And that's probably the best one for understanding this issue of what I mean by negative return on investment of taxpayers' money. So are you going to use the taxpayers' money to make the pie bigger, or are you just going to be greedy and pig out and take it, and it, you know, you end up making the whole thing weaker? So with those two variables and with investment to taxpayer positive or negative, and the political and economic alignments multipolar or unipolar, we map out four worlds, four scenarios, and let me describe what they are. The first is global musical chairs, and that's a world where we live in a multipolar world, so there's no one guy who's controlling centrally, whether it's the United States or Mr. Global, but we have a negative return on investment to taxpayers. So there's too much difficulty in building out markets and cooperation. Too much capital has to go into warfare and sort of dangerous competition for resources. You get disaster capitalism. The United States is in a relatively good position. We're sitting Fortress America behind the Atlantic and the Pacific. And so U.S. and developed world equities are stronger. It's a much more human world than a unipolar world, thank God, but it's, you know, it's a world that has risks in it. The scenario, popsicle index rising, and you all know my popsicle index. And if you don't, I'll just explain it briefly. The popsicle index is the percent of people who believe a child can leave their home, go to the nearest place to buy a popsicle, and come home alone safely. So if it's 100%, it's unthinkable that a child isn't free to roam in your neighborhood during daylight hours. So popsicle index rising is a world that is multipolar. It's much more human, but we figured out we've got the positive return on investment thing right for taxpayers' money. And we've beat what I call the Midianite thing, where the factions compete and everybody gets greedy. In fact, if you look at what's possible with new technology, if that kind of collaboration can happen both nationally and globally, we're talking about enormous explosive wealth creation. It's very hard to describe, because you can't imagine how much wealth is being destroyed by sort of not optimizing, particularly the government money. But if you combine that with what new technology can do, it's quite extraordinary. So that is financially a pretty glorious scenario. The next one is a positive return on investment to taxpayers, but we go unipolar. I call that one mind control. You know, I'm very focused on getting return on investment to taxpayer, but I have to emphasize, I think it's much more important to fight for human civilization than getting the positive return on investment right, because in a scenario where we're strictly command and control top down, you're going to see the middle class preserve financially, but we're all going to be microchipped and, you know, entrained from our smartphones, and it's going to be, I mean, you're basically talking about a materially pleasant slavery with lots of drugs and entrainment technology. And I think the hideousness of this scenario is why it's so important to really fight and insist on human civilization. You know, and in this scenario, you really don't care what the equity markets are doing. You want self-sufficient living in a remote area as far away from empire as possible. Then the last scenario is negative return on investment to taxpayer and unipolar, which is sort of the world's worst. It's called the war machine. And unfortunately, you know, that's a world where you want to have, you know, your own income-producing agriculture. You want to have very high-quality corporate bonds and some precious metals. It's not as controlled as the mind control world. But needless to say, the pie has shrunk tremendously. Everybody's busy stealing each other's pie instead of baking new pies. So every year, I give percentages to each scenario. I did again this year. I said that global musical chairs was going to be 40%, popsicle index rising was 30%. One of the things we all want to do is work as citizens wherever we are to do everything we can to shift things to popsicle index rising. But remember, both of those two are multipolar worlds. So what I'm saying is 70% chance of a multipolar world, 30% chance of a unipolar world. I think there is enough pushback against inhuman culture and for human culture that I think there's a 70% chance we end up in a human-oriented multipolar world. We're going to have to work out how we adapt new technology. So there's a lot to work out, because new technology can be very supportive of humans, but it can also be very inhuman or encourage non-human kind of behavior. So we're going to have to work out the technology, but I think there's a good chance we can do that. Anyway, so 30% chance for the unipolar scenarios. I give the mind control scenario 20%, which makes me nervous. And it's the scenario I'm most concerned with avoiding. And then war game, I give 10%. So those are my percentages, and you can see them when you click through. If you click on Get Ready, it'll just take you to the big graph that will show you all four scenarios. But then you can click down to the individual scenarios. And what I do on each one is I write a description, and then I put a list of, okay, if we're in that scenario, here's what your actions in 2017 are going to be, and here's what your best long-term investment is. And there's a very wide divergence between what's the best long-term investment in each scenario. The reality is we have no idea which way it's going to go. And what I say on all scenarios is for 2017, there is absolutely no way to tell which way it's going to go. And that's why it's very important that you stick with disciplined allocations. So what do I mean by disciplined allocations? Well, let's talk about what you do. What I would really encourage you to do is read through each one of these scenarios, and particularly the list of actions. I call it implications for 2017. But also read the introduction. In the introduction, I talk a lot about why this year it's different, and I can't just say, oh, it's going to slow burn again. And I talk about a lot of the things we all need to do. I also gave a list like that in the 2015 annual wrap-up, which you can link to from the page with the graphic. And I would encourage you to take a look again at the 2015 annual wrap-up section called Get Ready, Get Ready, Get Ready, where I laid out the scenarios and sort of the actions you can take. So between the introduction, between the implications for 2017, and then the the write-up of actions in the 2015 annual wrap-up a lot for you to think about and chew on. Now, everyone is different, and it's very important to me that what you do is not take my percentages, but you take your own percentages. What are the chances you think that it will go to which quadrant? If you want to, make up your own scenarios. But then what I want you to do is sit down and allocate your resources in such a way that you are prepared to be successful in all four scenarios. I want you to have a plan on how you're going to rock and roll and be successful, and then have it show you what are the things you need to do. So, for example, one of the things I say in all of the scenarios is you need to focus on your home, your business, and your community. What is it that makes your popsicle index rise? And so there are certain things that are applicable to all. There are certain that are just some. So holding a core position in precious metals is valuable in three scenarios. It's really not that important in popsicle index rising. I would always want to have a core, though. So you want to think through, if, for example, if you think there's a 100% chance of popsicle index rising, then you are absolutely going to take advantage of all sorts of opportunities this year in equities, particularly if emerging markets gets hit hard by a strong dollar. It's a great time to pick those up. Frontier markets are certainly down. I think there's probably no one listening to this call who thinks there's a 100% chance of popsicle rising. But what you can see is allocate your resources in anticipation of things going in many different directions. Now, I want to talk, so when I say allocation, remember, what I mean is the big allocations. First of all, are you. You're your most important investment, your health and your skills. So I really want you to think about, okay, where can you invest time or money in building up your health and building up your skills in 2017? That's your most important investment. Second is residence and real estate, certainly pay down debt if there's any way. This is an environment, given the low yields, where the less debt you have, the better. There are exceptions to that, but by and large, paying down your debt is a good investment. Cash, you want to make sure you have a high-quality custodian. We did a great first quarter wrap-up called Where to Stash Your Cash, and I would encourage you to pull that out. It's still plenty timely. Then precious metals core position, we describe what that is and how to calculate it in our blog commentary. See what percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals. It's still completely timely today. Fixed income, we are in a turn in the bond market, and I just think that bonds, you need to stay short and very high quality. Essentially now, because of the possibility of interest rate rises, bonds is a place to stay mostly in short stuff, so it's mostly cash equivalents. I'd rather be in a good paying equity with a good dividend if I wanted yield. And then equities, some commentators are concerned that interest rate rises are gonna hurt equities. Traditionally, I don't expect big interest rate rises. The idea that interest rates are going up 300-400 basis points, I think, is very unlikely. Again, anything's possible. I just don't think it's likely. But traditionally, if interest rate rises stay within 150, 175 basis points a year, the stock market is able to handle it. To me, the important issue is the bond market is more than double the size of global equity markets, which means all that money needs a place to go. So I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing such strong equity markets is the there's tremendous commitment on the planet to build out the global equity markets for many different reasons. We've certainly written and done wrap-ups on that before when we did Planet Equity. So I'm not going to repeat it here, but I see a major commitment. And if anything, privatization out of governments into corporations means, you know, weaker bond markets, stronger equity. So I think the long-term commitment to equities continues. Let me talk about some of the challenges right now in investing in equities. I think the big one is we are watching all markets overwhelmed by a combination of central bank policies, the integration of artificial intelligence into decision-making and allocation of much funding and program trading, and all of that makes the market completely. It can be very, very difficult to fathom the logic of it, particularly in the short run. It really is a market that defies logic. So, for example, if you looked at after a month after the election, 50% of the increase in the Dow came from three stocks, one of which was Goldman Sachs. So, and if you look at those three stocks, those were three stocks that I, as an investment advisor, would never have recommended, which means, you know, unless you recommended them, you're going to way perform underneath the index. And what you saw all year long was good money managers often underperforming under the index because they were smart enough to avoid certain things that were flying. So it's very, very hard to perform in the index unless you're in an index fund. Now, the challenge is if you're a retail investor and you want to do an index fund, then the question is who's going to decide when it's time to sell. In other words, we know a modified buy and hold strategy works much better in the U.S. equity markets. And what that means is if it turns to a bear, you should get out. So if you don't have an active manager, it means it's on you to figure out, you know, when you're going to bear to monitor it. And then get out. So the advantage of the index is you're going to go with the index. Traditionally, 22% of active managers have outperformed the index. And so just make sure if you are with an active manager, because you want the active manager to know when to buy and sell, you just want to make sure that you're with somebody who has performed with or above the index over the long term. Remember, somebody who outperforms the index can underperform for a year or two. That's not strange at all. The second thing is, and this is one I think a lot about in my work, do you want to be long the markets or do you want to be hedged? The problem, I'm a great believer when the market turns bear and getting out. And the problem is we're way overdue for a 20 to 25% correction, which means we literally have to go down 30%. Before we know if we've turned into a bear, and that makes me extremely uncomfortable. And my solution to that is to recommend to people that they use hedge products where a portion of their gains and dividends is spent on hedges. So let's say the market goes up 25%, they go up less because the hedge drags them back. But if the market goes down 50%, they could, you know, they're not going to go down anywhere near as much or not at all, depending on how the hedge works. So a hedge really protects you on the downside, and I'd rather give up a little bit of the upside in this market than take that risk, because that way the market can go down 30%, but I'm not down and I can get out. So that means a lot to me. Now, I'll miss out a lot on a crash up, but that's okay. I want to avoid those big downs. And then the final thing I would say is, given the combination of both the politics, the central banking intervention, and now the advent of AI, you cannot time these markets. You're going to have to be buy and hold. Again, modified buy and hold. If it turns bear, you get out. But you're going to have to live with tremendous swings. So we talked about the roller coaster that the Treasuries rode, the roller coaster that gold and silver rode. You can't, if you're going to put money in something, and that's why I say you have to be very disciplined with allocations. Don't put money into anything that you're not willing to ride the ups and downs on, and the ups and downs and the swings are going to be very significant. And that's why I keep coming back to quality, quality, quality. You want quality of custodians, qualities of companies you do business with. Now is not a time to stretch for yield and lower your quality. You want to stick with quality. Okay, so that's it for the equity overview. I really want you to access the web presentation and work through the scenarios and look at your unique situation, both personal, business, and investment planning, and see if you can't use these scenarios to stretch your thinking about how you would be successful in each one of them, and see what that tells you about how to optimize your investment of time and money this year. If you have any questions on the materials, I want to make sure you let us know. You can post the comments in the subscriber section or send them to Ask Catherine. It's very important to me that you use these materials to have a successful and prosperous 2017. It's very important to me because I've been saying for so many years, it's going to slow burn again next year. And this year I'm saying, no, it's not going to slow burn. We're going to have significant reengineering of government money. We're going to have significant controlled demolitions by insurance companies, pension funds, and the wave is beginning. It's going to continue as the government reengineering happens. Municipalities, state are going to change as they grapple with unfunded pension liabilities. People are going to get hit. I describe a lot of this in the introduction this year, so I encourage you to read it. But what is important is when you look at that information, it is very important to realize every person is different. I could walk through an individual's financial assets and their geographical area where they live and work, and you get unbelievably varied fact patterns. And so this is all, you need to do a very bottom-up analysis of these things and how they're going to impact you personally. And I'm hoping that your knowledge of your own financial assets and your knowledge of your own particular situation combined with the different scenarios will help you really stretch your mind and start to look for some of the opportunities and make sure you're ducking those risks. So again, if you have any questions, please let me know. Our final wrap-up publication is next week with our big theme, the global harvest and what it means to investors. What you'll see as you go through all these scenarios is food is so important. And one of America's strategic advantages, it's arable land, it's water, and the fact that it's a major food exporter. Now, it really bollocks that up in the interests of trying to lock up the unipolar world. I think GMOs and IP were some of the ways it was trying to do that. And, of course, now that the new president plans to cancel withdraw us from the TPP, it's going to be very interesting to see what that means to food. So until next week, when we return with our final wrap-up publication, The Global Harvest and What It Means to Investors. Ladies and gentlemen, good night. Good night.